Sutton sets the pace in a formidable Ford at a brilliant weekend at Brands.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast, and we'll be looking back at the Brands Hatch Indy weekend and give you a full weekend review of obviously qualifying and all of the races. Did you enjoy the races this weekend?
I did, yeah. It was good. We were on the sofa for the first time this season. Did enjoy watching the races from the comfort of our own home. I have inherited your cold, so thank you.
Sorry about that. And you had a nice little nap on Sunday afternoon as well, didn't you?
Unscheduled nap, but yeah, I did fall asleep during the F4s. Nothing against the F4s. I'm unwell. Yeah. You have passed on your illness. A late birthday present to me. Thank you so much indeed.
Don't say I don't ever give you anything.
Happy days. But I'm here. I fought through. We're on Sudafed and we're on coffee, and we are here today, as you say, to discuss the Brands Hatch weekend. It was good.
Mm.
It was good. It was controversial.
Very.
And I think that, without wanting to bang my own drums very early on, my prediction of this being a very split year with the top five and everybody else is looking more and more correct by the race, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does already look like there's going to be those five drivers who are going to head the field and be up there and competitive each weekend, barring any mechanical or accidents. It's looking rather ominous.
It is. Part of me just thinks it's part of the part and parcel of cream of the crop rises to the top.
Mm.
I think I've said on multiple occasions, you could give Sutton a horse and chariot and he'd drag it to a race win in a touring car season. He's just that good at extracting everything out of a car. And Ingram, Hill, Turkington, Camish are all top-class drivers.
I think something else that you also noted over the weekend, and I know you're not a big fan of the new hybrid setup for this year, but...
Does that come across?
It does sometimes, yes. Is that if we had success ballast, you wouldn't be seeing the same sort of results that we're getting this year.
Agree. I did see a very compelling argument on social media was that the hybrid is actually there to make the better drivers better rather than to rein them in. And actually, if that is the case, and if hybrid is working, and that's a very big if in my mind, but for the sake of this argument, we'll say it is working. I think you are seeing the better drivers take another step up. But for me, I still don't think the hybrid's working.
Yeah, probably the best example of that was qualifying on Saturday as well, which I think we should get straight into.
Hi there, it's Sam here. If you're enjoying this podcast, why don't you leave us a like and don't forget to subscribe. You can also leave us a 5-star review, and we're also on social media at Facebook and Instagram, where you can message us directly. And now, let's get back to the show.
Camish had the lowest amount of hybrid available going into qualifying because he was topping the championship. However, he still managed to come out on top in qualifying.
Yeah, so he was on 1 second a lap above 84 miles an hour, there or thereabouts, which didn't affect him in any way, shape or form.
I do wonder whether the conditions somewhat affected it. It was a highly rain-affected session. The first 30-minute session, Sutton put in a decent time halfway through and sat there for quite a while until the traffic conditions started to improve. And he then had to go back out and make a better time. But those drivers were still up there.
There was a lot of red flags. I was thinking back to that meme gif of, oh my Lord, another one. Every 5 minutes, there was a red flag. Unfortunately, those conditions are very testing. And again, the cream of the crop, etc., etc. It caught out a fair few drivers, as we saw in quali one. Of course, it was a split quali. We had the qualifying and then the top 10 showdown. In the overall qualifying, we saw quite a few people fall foul of the conditions.
Yeah, so before going into the session, Rowbottom would have to take a 3-place grid penalty following an incident at Donington, which I'm still not sure we're fully clear on.
Ignoring the other flags, I believe.
Okay, right. So he was having to carry that penalty anyway.
Although on the website, they said it was about an incident with Thompson, but I think on commentary they were saying it was actually to do with the other flags, which might have been then the contact on Thompson because he should have been, I don't know.
So the first of many offs during this session as well. Halstead managed to go off on his own at Paddock. Well, sorry, not on his own.
Not on his own at all.
Because he was clipped by Gamble. And seeing the replays, they aren't particularly clear because they're just caught out of shot. But as you see the mentoring shot, Gamble is down the inside into Paddock.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether Halstead hasn't seen him because of the conditions or whether Gamble's thinking that he's letting him go through.
Why is Gamble there?
I don't know.
Halstead's not pulled out wide.
No.
I wouldn't say he's in the middle of the corner either. It's Halstead's corner for me.
Yeah, but he's not right on the apex where you'd expect.
It's qualifying.
I know.
In a race, sure thing. Fine in the race, but it's qualifying. It's Brands Hindi. It's a 47-second lap. Okay, a bit longer in the rain. Come on now. And I have to say that this is where the rule annoys me slightly, because in my mind, Halstead has caused the red flag because he's had to be retrieved from the gravel. So he's not allowed to take part in the session, because he's had outside help. And he loses his best lap time, despite the fact he's potentially an innocent party.
And he's the one that's been knocked off by Gamble.
And if you had a unscrupulous grid, you could quite easily fix that later in the year for, we need Turkington to not start this race very well. Osborne, go and clatter into him, would you, and take him out? And it'll cause it. You know, for me, that's daft. If you cause red for that because you go off on your own, as we'll come to in a minute, fine, fair play. But in these situations, for me, Gamble causes the incident more than Halstead does.
And there's no punishment for him. There was no damage on the car either, and he was able to carry on the session.
Yeah, in situations like that, it's a bit of a nonsense. But we're going to talk about rules extensively on this podcast, so, you know.
So as that red flag came out, Butcher managed to have a moment of his own going down paddock as well. There seemed to be a significant river coming across the track, which caught quite a few drivers out. So he had a spin and then went off into the gravel, but was able to reverse it back out under his own steam, so then was able to carry on the session himself.
Slightly surprised he didn't get a reprimand, because he did that under yellows. So there's an argument that
I think the conditions are taken into account with this.
Though I don't think he was... to the naked eye, it didn't look like he backed off.
No, but
yeah, perhaps.
You could quite easily make the argument that the tyres had got too hot at the rear and lost grip.
He was struggling through that corner throughout the session.
It was the one of about three times that he nearly had a big accident there.
Yeah.
Turkington had his first excursion at Graham Hill Bend, just running deep. I don't know whether he'd caught a puddle or something, but ran up onto the grass bank and filled the front of his radiator with grass. And then Hamilton had a spin at paddock. You'll start to see a theme here.
Yeah.
It was the most dangerous corner on the course. He managed to keep it out of the gravel somehow, which... kudos to him for doing that, and then was waiting for a few drivers to go by before he could then pull back around. Go by.
Office of pie.
By.
So Tim Harvey and you's really coming out.
And was waiting to rejoin the track, and then Morgan, so unfortunately, did exactly the same that Butcher did, lost the back end, and the car started pirouetting round. And unfortunately...
And round.
And seemed to get quicker as well,
didn't
it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was weird.
And unfortunately clattered into the front of Hamilton, putting them both out of the session, which caused another red flag.
Wasn't the last red flag?
No, it wasn't, no. Because then Powell, about 3 minutes after that restart, decided to go quite hot up into Druids and locked up and just had no turning ability at all. Went literally straight to the scene of the accident and ended up in the barrier.
Yeah, things aren't great with that Civic or that team, are they?
No, not at the moment. So another red flag was called. He was pulled out of the barrier. And then...
that was it, I think, wasn't it?
Osborne. Osborne is a weird one, because we only caught the end of this on the cameras.
Yeah, he's got a slide into clearways.
He's already spinning, coming through clearways, and then ends up in the barrier backwards and spins back out of it. And
I think he's gone to cut the corner, like we saw Ingram in particular doing... in the dry on the Sunday, but because of the wet, it's just spun him round.
Yeah.
And sent him hurtling.
Yeah, he's either done it on the inside or he's just run that little bit too wide and dropped the back end. But yeah, he made quite a mess of that car, although he was able to pull it out himself. There were just yellow flags in the area and he managed to drag it back to the pits.
The thing is, though, that a lot of the times those kind of things look a lot worse than they are, because the bodywork falls off because that's what it's designed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
The chassis is built like a tank.
The bodywork absorbs all the energy and displaces it. This was all within the first 15 minutes of that first session as well. And then the time started to come down. It looked like the weather had eased off and the track was starting to dry up with more cars being out there. Because the first couple of red flags, Sutton was still just sitting there watching his tablet and watching everyone else go round, wasn't he?
Coronation Omnibus.
And then Turkington did exactly what he did earlier in the session, ran deep into Graham Hill, and I've literally copied and pasted what he did. yeah, I don't know whether he just missed his breaking point or again whether there was a puddle.
No, it was a busy session, as you say. Of course, only 10 drivers could make it through. Jake Hill eventually would top the times from Sutton, from Turkish and from Camish. Butcher, Ingram, Thompson, Cook, Lloyd and Pearson rounded out the top 10. Just to give a few props there, Pearson and Thompson and Lloyd in particular, good effort. And Cook basically fell in love with eighth over this weekend, didn't he? That was his spot, as we find out.
Just inside the top 10 was where he thought it best to be. Dan Rowbottom, with that three-place grid penalty, had qualified 16th, but we dropped down to 19th for the race start.
Just before we go on. I want to give a little quick shout out to Edwards. 19th, given the conditions, given the fact that car wasn't it was there in spirit, if not, or in body, if not in spirit, last week or last time out. That's not a bad effort to be inside the top 20.
No,
and
not
only
at
a
all.
Second off the pace.
And there are a couple of drivers there behind her in Moffat, Dogal, and Watson, who didn't have any issues during the session. We didn't see them spin or anything like that. And she's clear of those drivers as well. So going into the top 10 session, obviously, we'd had those 10 drivers. And it was Dan Camish that would go on to take pole with what was the last lap of the session, pretty much. By a substantial amount for car standards.
The track was getting drier, the track was getting quicker, and it was a case of the last man over the line would have taken pole, and Camish timed it brilliantly and was the last man over the line, took the pole position.
Yeah, Turkington and Hill were separated by just 0.006 of a second, and Ash Sutton would follow up in fourth.
Butcher in his Toyota Avensis, as the online has it, finishing.
ETC website, sort yourself out. Come on.
I mean, we never make mistakes.
No.
Never.
Never.
We're on YouTube now.
Exactly.
The Toyota in fifth. Then we had Bobby Thompson. A great effort by Thompson.
Brilliant.
Top six.
Wonderful weekend for him, which we'll get onto.
And let's not forget, this is a car that is running the stock engine. It's not developed its own. It's the front runner for that category. Out-qualifying Ingram is never a mean feat either. Fantastic
effort. Especially in those conditions as well.
Absolutely. Cook down in eighth. Yep. Dan Lloyd and Ronan Pearson rounding out the top 10.
Race one.
Okay. Moving on to race one then, and well, it all kicked off with a bang, didn't it?
It did. Well, of course, there was actually a decision to make before the race for the first time this season because if you weren't aware, the option tyres have been brought back in, meaning that you have to run both compounds over the weekend, which is effectively the medium and the soft, effectively, or the option and the prime. This would, of course, affect some drivers who wanted to start this race on softs. Some decided to save their softs. So the top two both started on the soft tyre and the next two both on the medium. So it's going to be interesting to see what sort of offset, if any, there was. Colin got the best start off the line, as you'd expect, in the rear-wheel drive car. Camish, for this race, got a decent start. But just couldn't live with the rear-wheel drive off the line, as it's going to be a feature for as long as there's rear-wheel drive cars in the sport. It's just the way it goes. Sutton made a good start as well, coming up to second, but then it all stopped suddenly with a bang.
Big bang.
Big bang.
Several bangs, actually.
Yeah, I mean, to give the facts, Rowbottom and Jelly came together. Rowbottom tried to go down the inside of Jelly coming onto the pit straight, turned Jelly into the pit wall. He spun back, collected Rowbottom, who collected Watson, and Morgan somehow got stuck up in it all as well.
Yep.
Four cars out, damage to the tyres, first lap, a bit silly in my view.
Yeah, we thought Moffitt might have been just caught up in it as well. I think he nudged off the rear of one of the cars, but was able to carry on and take the restart. But it was a hell of a hit as well. It was just where the Arco meets the end of the concrete pit wall. So Jelly had a huge impact on that front end, and then obviously came back across the track. Andrew Watson had nowhere to go.
No.
Really unfortunate.
Agreed.
Nothing that he could do. The same pretty much for Morgan, although he didn't end up with too much damage. Jelly, unfortunately, we wouldn't see for race two.
Nick Hamilton did really well to avoid this as well. Just to settle down the Nick Hamilton can't drive debate by showing that actually he's got very good track awareness and did very well to avoid this himself. So that debate once again shut down, hopefully. And House, because he almost actually got clipped by Househead, who decided he was picking a line. He was going to drive through that line.
Yeah, it didn't feel like he slowed down too much, did it?
It's difficult though, because on board Hamilton basically stopped. So, and let's not forget, they're just about to grab fifth going onto that straight. Looking around the 100-mile-an-hour mark, it's going to look quick, to be fair. For me, and I think the stewards also agreed, Rowbottom was the cause of this. And Robot Woman has attracted a lot of unnecessary hate and lack of goodwill for the off-season move to Napa. What I would say is that he's not helped himself this weekend with some poor on-track decisions. And actually, I found his interview afterwards bizarre. It was quite David Brent, in my view. Is that just me? Or I just found it kind of... didn't hold his hands up. I don't know. I couldn't really... It's just a weird interview.
From the replays that we've seen, it very much looks like he could have blended out of the throttle and just tucked back in behind Jelly.
Well, if Hillis
both of them had made decent starts as well, so they were looking to try and progress through the field, having started 18th and 19th together, and they're meant to be two of the quicker cars and the more ready teams, and this really doesn't help.
No, and if Hill was to blame for Donington... which we sort of think he was, but I don't think
anyone does apart from those stewards.
But then there could be no debate here, in my mind. No debate.
No.
Just for me, for an opening lap, it's just a bit silly. It's just a bit pointless because all you've effectively done is end both your weekends effectively.
Unfortunately, it also took 45 minutes to get the barriers repaired and the track ready again for racing.
I mean, instances like this are going to be part of racing. There's going to be contact. Definitely. Trying too hard maybe to rectify the poor qualifying or the disappointing qualifying.
A whole race to do it, and you don't need to be a hero on the first lap.
To finish first. First, you must finish. Yeah. Completely agree. The restart was going to be set back to the lap before, but because there wasn't a lap, it was qualifying order. It was not a grand conspiracy, as some people on the internet have tried to say. The rules are you go back to the last racing lap. The racing lap hadn't... there's only been one lap, so you have to go back to qualifying. It really isn't a conspiracy against Colin Turkington to promote Napa Fords.
I mean, it didn't hamper him too much.
It didn't, because after the 45-minute break, he just sped off into distance again, like he did on race one.
Both BMWs got really good launch on that second restart, and Camish not as good.
And that was pretty much race one, to be honest with you. A few more moves in the pack. Sutton, got a good move on Camish. Camish gave him room, as you'd expect, but gave him good.
Both of them were able to get past Hill quite easily, and then Hill seemed to drop off as well.
Hill's a weird one this weekend.
He wasn't at it, was he?
Well, the car wasn't. It was good enough for fourth, and quite comfortably fourth, but wasn't really good enough to push on. We did see a nice send by Ingram on Butcher into Paddock Hill Bend, a very late break move, lick the stamp and send it. And we actually saw Bobby Thompson get quite racy on Rory Butcher as well to take sixth. It's really good to see Hard at the front of the grid. They've taken a lot of criticism from us as well at times on the off-season about running six cars. But actually, with Thompson and to a slightly lesser extent Lloyd, we expect that as he's learning the team, that car, I think, can mix it at the front this season. Not for race wins, but they can mix it in the top 10.
Yeah, I certainly think they'll be looking to capitalise on this weekend. We knew this weekend was really going to be a fairly good one for them anyway. Anticipated that. They tend to go well at Brands. It's their home circuit. Possibility of changeable conditions. It was almost a perfect storm for them, and Bobby took perfect score from what he could have got, really.
Completely agree. Other than that, race one was fairly unexciting. We'll do a penalty roundup at the end of the race three, just to say who got penalties. As I say, I think Road Bottom was penalised with two penalty points, I think they said on commentary, for that move.
Race two.
Moving on to race two then. Possibly one of the most processional races I've seen in touring cars. Boutel was meant to start from pit lane, but he had an issue just coming out on lap to the grid or something. But he managed to drag the car back around, get it to the pit lane, and they were able to sort that out. He lost a couple of laps, which was unfortunate, because he looked fairly solid in race one.
Yeah, he did.
Halstead had to start from the pit lane as well. As we said already, Jelly wasn't on the grid for obvious reasons. They just didn't have quite enough time to get the car fixed.
I called it from the moment we saw the damage to the car that he weren't getting out for race two.
Morgan, however, also road bottom, and Watson managed to all get out on track, although Morgan was saying just as he went out that they hadn't even had time to do the alignment on the car.
Yeah.
Which isn't a surprise because I'm sure there was all hands to deck in that team having two cars caught up in the race one instant. Front-wheel drive managed to start much better than rear-wheel drive in this one, and I can't explain why.
No, so I think sometimes it just happens that way. A lot depends on... Brands are a funny one because it's a slanted...
Cambered,
that's the word, thank you.
Slanted cambered.
Start line. And actually, there is the old wives' tale, if you like, that the
outside
seconds, is better than starting on pole. And perhaps that played its part.
Yeah, what was also noticeable is the opening lap in this one, the rear-wheel drives really took a little while to come up to temperature, which we know is a little bit of a trait of theirs. And Sutton made the most of that, didn't he? Absolutely made the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to look at how to overtake on a millimetre, then watch Ash Sutton, because whilst I accept there's a reputation that he's a hard racer, sometimes a little bit too aggressive, if you look at his overtakes from the last couple of years in particular, now he's calmed down a little bit in the sport and found his feet in the sport, him and Ingram, for me, are the best two on the grid because they just time everything inch perfect. And this move on Turkington, we're not going to be able to do it justice by talking about it, but I'll try and talk you through it, but you're going to have to go and find it out for yourselves if you've not seen it already. Feints to the outside, going down Paddock Hill Bend, which moves Colin across the track just enough for Sutton to then sweep up the inside on the curb and take him into Druids effectively. It's just a stunning move because it happens so quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a quick piece of thinking and driving from Sutton. Doesn't touch the car as far as I can see.
No.
And just absolutely on a sixpence down the inside. It's sublime.
And him and Ingram were the class of the field in this second race. Once those two got past the BMWs and Camish, they shot off into the distance. And actually, by the end of the race, they were over 2.5 seconds clear of everyone else.
It's worth saying that Ingram pulled off a similarly nice move on Hill going up to Durant as well. And Turkington did well not to get hung completely out wide. And then Ingram with a very aggressive move at clearways. It sounds like it's an agenda at this point, and it's not. But Colin didn't really defend it. Ingram was through before the corner even started.
He's happy to take the points at this stage of the season, is he? There's nothing to lose out on. If you're coming third, it's fine. You're still banking the points.
Yeah, I get that.
And you've just got to make sure that you don't fall too far back.
But...
And having taken the win in race one...
Yeah. It's
percentages, I think.
Your logic is impeccable. I don't disagree. But what I will say on the flip side is that this season, I think 80% or higher of the races and podiums are going to be taken by that top five. I think this year more than ever, every single place will count.
Okay.
And the difference in points, whilst normally I'd agree with you isn't that much, I think this season it could be massive.
Well, we will find out as it gets down to that crunch time towards the end of the season.
You can look at it, right, six races in, four of them have been won by Ford.
Yeah.
Ford have been on the podium at every single race so far.
Yeah.
The other two on the podium have been a BMW, the other podiums had a BMW and a Hyundai on it.
Mm-hmm.
The other two race wins have come from a BMW and a Hyundai.
Yeah. We know those are the three cars to beat.
So that's what my point is, that 80% of the top three places are going to be taken by those five drivers, I imagine. So, I don't know. This early in the season, maybe. Maybe that's it, this early in the season. Okay, fair point. But if we're talking about this at round
seven, yeah,
I think you'd be a lot more critical.
Yeah, quite possibly. But we know that Turkington's that kind of driver. He doesn't want to get himself into trouble. And... his best way around that is to, we'll let him have the position there. I've already taken the win. I built up my points on Ingram in that first race.
Yeah, but I'd argue that was...
I think that's more his thinking.
I'd say that's fine in the Jason Plater era where he will chuck away a win for the... chuck away a second for a shot of win.
Yeah.
I don't think Ingram's like that.
No.
I don't... Mind you, Sutton is like that as we come to, so maybe you're right.
Osborne was the lead car on softs in this race, and he made real good progress as well to win the Jack's Ears in this race.
Can I just say on that one that the respect should be as loud as the disrespect. He's taken a fair share of criticism.
Yep.
This race, actually this season, he looks a lot more comfortable in the car.
He does.
Some really good race craft in this weekend, particularly in this race. Yes, you can say he's on the soft tyre. He's still got to drive the car. Yep. He's still got to make the moves. And yeah, he won't be used to racing with people like Cook, Butcher, etc. He pulled a fantastic move on Cook.
Yes, he did. And he had a really good battle with Collard and Gamble towards the end. okay, maybe didn't end up as he wanted it to.
No, and he got a penalty at the end for his move on Collard. But hey, look, you've got to give credit where it's due. He looks a lot more settled in that team.
He does.
And he looks very at home with the car. Yeah, fair play. He did well this weekend.
Jade unfortunately had a 5-second penalty added to her race time for a grid position issue. I assume that's just being too far over the white line. Something that we don't see too much nowadays. Certainly not picked up on camera as much.
No, but the stewards are very
And I also noticed, I think, that Camish in the first race gave a lot of space away.
Yeah.
Making sure that he didn't fall foul of it. But yeah, so Sutton took the win fairly easily from Ingram in this one.
Managed, wasn't it? Well managed.
Yeah, there was a second between them at the end. And as you say, Osborne and Collard all had a little bit of a coming together with Cook and Gamble at the end. Cook benefited the most, with Collard actually losing 3 spots. Although, as you say, he was given that spot back, or one of those spots back, with that Osborne penalty.
Yep, so a round up of the top 15 places. Sutton from Ingram from Turkton, who was in a race of his own. Hill, again, just wasn't quite on the pace to challenge, was he, this weekend? Dan Cam banking the points down in 5th. Rory Butcher, 6th. Josh Cook moved up a place to 7th. Gamble, 8th. Collard, 9th. Osborne rounded out the top 10. Bobby Thompson, who went backwards in this race, unfortunately, to 11th. Chilton, Pearson, Lloyd and Rowbottom rounding out your top 15. Adam Morgan got from the back of the grid to 16th, which is a decent effort, if a little bit disappointing not to get points.
Yeah, especially as there are only 2 drivers, I think, in this one that didn't finish. Obviously, Jelly didn't start, and then Taylor Smith had to come into the pits on lap 19.
Yeah, but it had intermittent engine problems this weekend.
That slows you down.
It will do, yes, it does, generally speaking. Yeah.
Race 3.
Shall we move on to race 3 then, mate?
Yeah, so for race 3, Sutton pulled out number 11, which popped Bobby Thompson onto pole position. Butcher had an issue coming to the grid with lots and lots of smoke, but the team assured the scrutineer on the grid that it was just a little bit of fire, nothing to worry about.
It wasn't even a fire. At the end of race 2, his oil catch can had filled up completely, which is something that you wouldn't normally see. Normally, you want all the oil to be in the engine. When temperatures get a bit higher and it all expands a little bit more, it's got to have somewhere to go, so they have a little oil catch tank that they categorically said on the grid will be fine.
Clenching a little bit this point, because one of your predictions, as we'll come to in the driver grades and prediction podcast, was that Butcher would finish in the top 8 all 3 races.
Yeah, and he was looking really good for it.
He was. We'll come to that in a moment. Thompson had a very good start, but Collard had a better one, taking Thompson at Graham Hill Bend. I said to you before the race, I thought Collard would win this one.
Yep.
And he made a very, very good start at that Toyota. Collard looked really racy all weekend, actually.
You said this last weekend as well, that apart from, obviously, the accident damage that he had in race 2, he was well on the pace and well inside the top 10 pace-wise.
I'm more impressed by Collard than Butcher at the moment, I think.
Okay, fair.
I think.
Yeah.
But Sutton was up to 5th by the end of lap 1, having started 11th. Now, we didn't see a replay on the telly of this. I've rewatched the race
today. Okay, you have. That's fine.
It's just, he gets a demon start and he just knows what
to do. Does he go around the outside of everyone, or?
I can't remember now.
Okay, good.
But it is.
He says he watched it.
I did watch it, but yeah. I can't. Well, you watched it live. I had to make notes on this one.
I couldn't figure out how he managed to get up to that by the end of lap 1, and I thought, troubles are brewing here.
So, for the record, he would save his soft tyres to the end of the day, which is supposedly the better tyre. He said in his interview he'd seen how well Osborne had made his work and was therefore feeling a little bit confident of what he could do with it.
Yep.
I think that we didn't have... I know that we didn't have the tyre options last year, and we do this year. I do think that that's going to negate the reverse grids a lot, because people like Sutton, I think, will keep softs for the end, seeing the difference they can make, particularly at places like Brands, where it's a short lap. Mm-hmm. They can probably push on those tyres for longer. Okay, at Snetterton, you probably can't push on those tyres because it's a much longer, more abrasive lap, but at Brands, you probably can. But he was able to make progress on those soft tyres through the field. I've written down expletive ash just how quick he was. He'd set the fastest lap by lap two, I think. Just it was like watching Sutton in the Infinity when those classic charges he would make from farther down the field.
He was on fast forward.
Yeah, he was.
Basically.
I've worked it out. His hybrid was working. Nobody else's was working. I don't know, because he had no hybrid, because he'd won the race, and he had no hybrid to use, and he made a mockery of it. It doesn't make a difference.
Done?
Yeah.
Good. Do you think, then, that the option tyre is going to make a bigger difference throughout the season?
More so than the hybrid, yeah.
Obviously, the only track that we don't use it at will be Thruxton, because they have their own specialist hard tyre, because of the excess pressures and issues they've had there before. But yeah, do you think this could be maybe going into the final round, if it hasn't been won already?
It won't have been won by the final round.
Do you think it's going to have a big bearing on it as well?
Yeah, because there's a little bit of tactics. But again, this comes to the best drivers will know what to do and will know when to use them. And yeah, I just think that it's going to play even more into my theory that it'll be 80% will be won by, or more will be won by, the top five, because, you know, Sutton shouldn't be able to start 11th and win the race by, we're going to come to how he won the race, but he shouldn't be up to second position that easily from 11th on the grid.
No, but no, it always depends on what the other drivers are doing.
It does, but what I would say is on the days of success ballast, generally, Sutton could do it, because the Infinity found a way to run success ballast fantastically, but generally speaking, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Obviously, last season we saw quite a few double winners, so drivers winning the first race of the round and then the second race as well, having started from pole position. Do you think that's something we're going to see more this year, or less now the option tyre's back?
Less, although I think there's a real chance this year somebody wins all three.
Okay.
Because if
I can understand that, especially if a six or seven gets pulled out.
If Sutton wins round one and two and then pulls out a six and he's saved his soft tyre, you might as well win all three, isn't he?
Yeah.
With the pace of Ford show.
Yeah.
Watson had to retire with a problem. Not a great weekend for him. The highs and lows of motorsport, I'm afraid, Andrew. One week you're the cock of the walk, the next you're a feather duster.
Deary me. You've been waiting to say that one, haven't you?
I have, absolutely. Cook then ran Osborne wide at the end of Graham Hill. A little bit of a naughty move from Cook for me. It's on the edge of being fine. If you're going to stick yourself there, Osborne, you've got to run. Yeah. You run that risk. However, on those opening laps, there's not really anywhere else Osborne can go. He's not like he can blend out and come back across the track. I don't know. I think it's on the edge of being fine. It's hard racing,
but you put yourself in a dangerous position. You're going to get shoved out and shuffled down the order. Consequently,
up front, Sutton have gone second, and I wrote down here win question mark.
Yeah.
I said to you, actually, as he was going through, Sutton wins this.
I think by the end of lap one, I realised that Sutton he was going to have so much pace, and the car had so much pace all weekend.
Yeah. We saw Hill with a very good late move on Cook. Again, I think we discussed that
good
Hill.
Good dive.
Good dive, but slightly disappointed with his lack of pace.
The car didn't seem quite added.
No, it didn't seem quite set up right. We had a nice little battle between Butcher and Gamble. Nice to see the teams being allowed to race, which is always good to see.
chopping and changing positions between the both of them, with Butcher coming out on top at that point.
Yes, but it was a good little battle to see. Jenny then ran into further problems. He was crabbing. We didn't ever get to see why. I'm assuming there was contact.
I assume he must have hit a wall, possibly. We didn't see how the car was driving as it had come back out of the pits for the start of race three. But it looked like he was recovering from an incident, maybe of his own making, maybe of someone else's helping. But the car certainly wasn't straight.
No. It was one of those disaster weekends for Jelly, wasn't it? He's got these in him.
Unfortunately, I think I called it as
well. You did as well. You did. And
I do apologise if you listen.
To be fair to Jelly, I would say that it's not his fault this weekend.
No.
Other than to say, if you qualify down in that area, you always run the risk. But to be fair, don't think he takes much, if any, blame for race one. Can't get him out for race two. We don't know what happens in race three.
Yeah.
Butcher then had to pull off with a retirement, which looked to be related to the oil. Lots of smoke.
Lots of smoke.
I would imagine it was a similar problem to what he had on the way to the grid.
I wonder, looking at the colour of the smoke as well, because you can normally tell a decent amount about it, I wonder whether an oil line had come off on the turbo.
Yeah, possibly.
Because it gone big time, but only on one side. Normally, if you have a whole engine go, it'll come pluming out the back. But yeah, he scratched my hopes.
Yeah, he sort of
absolutely
up
dashed
to that point. Yeah, you were feeling quite good about life, weren't you?
I was. But... and I thought, oh, it's going to be a brilliant weekend. I've called a couple of these things, yeah, and I'll be back in with the predictions.
Shame.
Oh
well, life goes on.
Yep.
Hill then perform a quite magnificent spin. Originally, people, including ourselves, wondered whether oil had been dropped on the circuit. It hadn't. A tyre had let go in a big way, unfortunately, mm-hmm, for Hill. That's interesting because obviously he was running a soft tyre.
I think he might have caught a little bit of debris because we saw no other real issues.
Or nicked a curb,
yeah. We saw no other real puncher issues across the weekend. I think the only other person that had a tyre issue was Jade, but I think that may or may not have been following contact.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was loaded up as well coming down paddock, so I think that just any cut is going to go.
Right, let's then get to the controversy, shall we? Because this has...
We've got a good 15 minutes that we can do on this.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Collard leading the race, holding Sutton back really well.
Yeah. With the pace that Sutton had come up behind him and the way he had charged through, we thought, okay, it's a foregone conclusion. He's going to get Collard at some point.
Yeah.
And he had a really good go at him two laps from the end when I think Sutton might have known, possibly, we don't know what's obviously spoken about on the radios, or whether he saw the overhead board to show that Collard had been given a penalty for track limits.
Yes. Okay, I will talk about this to begin with, then, about the track limits, because you know that I like a rant. I am actually going to be on the side of the officials of Motorsport UK on this one,
yeah,
which is unusual, I know. The way the system works is the first one is noted.
Yeah.
The first infringement is noted. The second infringement, you get a warning, i.e. stop doing it, otherwise you get a penalty.
A black and white flag.
And then you get a 5-second penalty for every time you do it. So, as I understand it, he wasn't giving a 10-second penalty. He was given 2 5-second penalties for 2 different violations.
What I must assume is, mm-hmm, because it was given as a 10-second penalty, that it must have been twice on one lap,
yeah,
that he's probably exceeded track limits.
That... or the commentating team hadn't picked up on 2 separate instances of 5 seconds being given, because obviously it was showing on TSL.
I have a feeling, because I think we saw the shot of the overhead board at the start at Brands. You have the light board, and then above, yeah, that you have the screen which tells you any,
yeah,
flags and stuff, yeah, like that. And on there, I had a feeling it said 10 seconds.
Which would suggest that it was potentially, yeah, twice in one lap over 2 different, yeah, corners. What I will say is, and hold the front page here, I agree entirely with Tim Harvey's analysis on this on the telly. To be fair to him,
blimey,
it has got to be every corner of every circuit for every driver. Because,
yep, it's got to be marshalled properly.
Yeah.
And whether it's down to cameras, whether it's down to pressure pads, there has been a slight change in the regulation this year, yep, of what track limits is.
It's anything crossing the white line.
And that is... it hasn't been brought into effect officially by Motorsport UK, but Toker have taken it into effect for the Toker events.
Yeah. The thing is, everybody will know the rules, and this is basically what Ingram and Sutton both said afterwards, that, yeah, everybody will understand and know what the rules are. He would have got warnings. The team should have, presuming they have, but if they haven't, they should have communicated those to him and told him to back off.
Yep.
Collard is ultimately responsible for where his car is on the track. I think the penalty seems harsh because of the context. That's the only... if this is in 9th and 10th, nobody bats an eyelid. It's because of the context it feels harsh. But, yeah, context doesn't matter. If he has cut the corners and fallen foul of the track limit rules, the punishment has to be given. You know, Sutton hasn't done the same behind him.
And the thing is, if he has exceeded track limits, you can't tell either way whether he's gained an advantage or kept an advantage, mm, that would have meant that Sutton might have gotten past him anyway.
Yeah.
So
ultimately, Sutton can't pass him by breaching track limits.
No.
So it stands to reason you can't keep a guy behind you by breaching track limits. It's harsh in the sense that it costs him his first touring car win. I think it's now his third podium he's lost over the penalties post-race. I've seen other people suggest, is another penalty the right way? I don't think so. I've seen grid drop speeds discussed on social media. I think for somebody like Collard, you take the reward for the risk, because you're going to know that you're not going to be at the front week in, week out. So actually, for the sake of a win, yeah, we'll start three places down next time out. That's fine by me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no relation in penalty for having a grid drop for the next round or next race compared to then taking the win in that one.
And actually, if you're somebody like Ash Sutton and it's coming to the crunch time of the season, it's race one, you might well take a play. You know, okay, I'll start fourth. I'll back myself on fourth in race two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a grid drop for me can't work for that reason. The only other way to deal with it is drive for penalty, which is way too harsh. Exclusion, which is way too harsh. So the only other way to deal with it is, or disqualification, which is way too harsh, is with penalties. And they know the rules, Sam. They know the rules.
They do. And if it had stayed to just 1 5-second penalty, you'd have still been on the podium.
Yeah. I think.
And I think it's because he's dropped all the way down to eighth, and it's two separate events that have compounded it and made it look a lot worse.
So we have put a poll up on our social media at time of recording. The Instagram poll came back at 60-40 in favour of it being the correct decision.
Yeah.
And our Facebook poll, just bear with me, one... It's
almost the same.
Yeah, pretty much the same. So is 63-27...
37.
Yeah. Mathematics, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's pretty much a 60-40 split, and people generally on the side of it being the right decision. Yes, there will be people out there sentimentally going, they're a Collard supporter or they're a Toyota supporter. Yeah. They're going, oh no, I don't agree with this and stuff like that. But across the general crowd, and I'd like to think most people have that support touring cars are fair. Yes, they have the drivers that they support, but if none of those two drivers are involved, they'll give a fair appraisal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As I say, it feels harsh because of the context, and I feel really sorry for Ricky Collard. Part of me does think, what does this guy have to do to get a podium or catch a break?
Yeah.
But I will go back to my previous comment. He is the only person responsible for where his car is on the track. He knows what the rules are. It's harsh because of the context. If this is for fifth and sixth, you don't bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
And actually, just before we move on from this, there is no conspiracy that something is being fixed. Come on, better than that. It's not a case that...
Yeah, it wasn't a BMW. Sorry.
But all jokes are, we're better than that. There's no conspiracy in place at all. And if Sutton had done track limits, he'd have been given penalties. Drivers up and down the grid, including the best, have been given penalties over these. I think Sutton's been given track... I mean, how many times has he lost in qualifying for track limit violations? You know, it is... The question and the problem for me is going to be consistency. And when we go to non-MSV tracks, where there's not the pressure pads, where there's not necessarily the cameras, are we going to see the same consistency upheld? That's my worry. That's my question. We're only going to find out. We've only been to MSV tracks so far, and that's going to be the case next time out as well.
Yeah.
But it's got to be policed properly, and it's got to be policed consistently. That I do agree with. And I would be amazed if Collard was the only driver in this race who was guilty of track violations and the others just didn't get picked up.
My final point is that these top drivers, you've got your Turkington, Sutton, Ingram, all champions, know how to drive to the absolute limit and where the limit of the track is and what they can get away with. And that's why they are champions, and that's why they are considered the best drivers on the grid. Collard's had a season and a bit in the sport and maybe needs to learn where those limits are.
I think...
And unfortunately, you're going to get hit with a penalty sometimes.
I think also Collard is raised on the old school with his dad, which is completely understandable. But I think that school has changed. For better or for worse, that era of touring cars is gone.
Yep.
We know that push-to-pass is now completely cracked down upon, sometimes too harshly in my opinion, but it's completely cracked down upon. You cannot do anything that represents push-to-pass anymore. Contact is punished much more often these days. Whether that's good for the sport, you can debate until the cows come home. But yeah, Collard, who's come through the school of hard knocks, as it were, has perhaps just got to adapt to this new, potentially over-officiated in some ways, but certainly this new era of touring cars, which relies heavily on technology and enforcement of the rules to make it as fair as possible. And the rules are there to stop people from, you know, yeeting people into the shadow realm to get a place. You know, it can't be right that you can just push another driver off the track to get a win, a la Matt Neal.
Right then, we'll round up the results from race three. Sutton would go on to take the win with fastest lap as well, I believe.
This was his biggest points haul win of his career this weekend.
That doesn't surprise me.
No.
He was very good this weekend.
Just, sorry, before you carry on, what did you make of him and his move on Collard? For me, it was just foolhardy, personally. I don't know what he was doing. He would have surely have got the message.
As I said to you at the time, he wanted to lead a lap to get that extra point.
Yeah,
which
possibly.
He did.
Yeah, yeah.
He led across the line, got that extra point. And I think, I don't know whether that would have been given to him if he'd have won the race in the stewards' room afterwards with the penalty being.
I don't know, but I would say for me,
Point's going to matter this season.
For me, it feels that it was a completely ludicrous decision because Collard is going to be in there with the red mist if he's been told that he's got a 10-second penalty. Why on earth would you go toe-to-toe with a man who's now got absolutely nothing to lose and is renowned, least known for being a little bit aggressive, which is not a bad thing. But
he may then go on to fight it in the stewards' room afterwards.
It doesn't matter if you get turned into a wall and you get put out of the race. You're not going to be given the race win then, are you? You're not going to be given the race win. Well, you're not.
I think that's why Collard fought back.
Yeah, but if Sutton gets turned into the wall a la Jelly,
yeah,
Sutton's not going to be given the win in the race room afterwards. The worst that happens is Collard gets a grid drop. They're not going to give him the win.
No, but...
Well, they're not, are they?
I think Sutton... I think Sutton wanted that extra point for leading the lap, and that's the only reason that he did it.
I just think it's a bit foolish, personally, in the context of how tight this is going to be as a championship.
That extra point could matter.
It could, but then you've guaranteed the race win at this point. What else have you got left to prove in that way? You're guaranteed the race
that
win.
Extra point.
Yeah, fine. But you could quite have easily ended up in the wall. And then you've... Okay, good luck if you've got 1 point for fastest lap rather than... I don't know. For me, that's where... I know I sound contradictory and hypocritical because you'd go, well, you moan if Colin did it. In that scenario, I wouldn't because that is... for the sake of a point, I think that the risk doesn't outweigh the reward.
Can I sum up the grid now?
Yeah, go on.
Thank you. Bobby Thompson will go on to take his best touring car result and come home in second, with Ingram also grabbing another podium. Dan Camish was in fourth, followed by Turkington, Morgan, Chilton, Collard demoted down to eighth, Rowbottom in ninth with Josh Cook in tenth, Dan Lloyd in 11th, Aidan Moffat getting points in 12th, followed by Ronan Pearson and Sam Osborne and Dexter Patterson.
Points for Patters. just before we move on that point, yeah, Morgan, good recovery drive in that race. Chilton looks like a new man in that car this year. Impressed by him a lot. Moffat, just pretty well in the end to be only two places behind Cook. I think that car's an absolute dog, personally.
Especially with how you were slating him this weekend.
It's just been disappointing, hasn't it? The whole car has been disappointing, himself included, in that way. It's just not been, for my opinion, particularly... great. Right, should we do the awards then before we bail out of this podcast?
Yeah, I think we're pretty set. Driver of the day has to be Ashley Sutton, doesn't it?
All day long.
Almost.
He's back in the championship hunt.
Almost a flawless performance and was... especially needed after the rough weekend they had at Donington.
Completely agree. I think we're unanimous on the villain as well. It's Rowbottom. The car is way better than what he got out of this weekend, as proven by his other three drivers.
Yeah, I mean, qualifying down in 16th, which turned to 19th, and then causing the incident in race one, being put out of that race, having to start the next race in the back, it almost snowballed into badness this weekend, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. My surprise good was Sam Osborne this weekend. Look, as I say, he's taken a fair share of criticism. And actually, this weekend, he raced really nicely. Showed some good racecraft, some good overtakes.
Yep.
Good pace, won the Jack Sears. Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, for me, it has to be Bobby. I knew the Cooperas were going to do fairly well this weekend.
But not that well.
I just didn't realise how well.
I agree with you.
And what's really encouraging is it's not just Bobby. Lloyd is also there or thereabouts in a car that he's not driven before.
Yeah, he's come in and started well.
Which, kudos to Bobby.
My surprise bad is slightly harsh maybe, but it's Hill. Just wasn't at the races in this. Yeah, scored good points until race three. But that's a bit unlucky of the puncher. But wasn't... with the leading pack, wasn't really ever challenging for a podium. just didn't seem to have the pace, A, of Turkington, but and then of the two the Fords or the Hyundais.
I'm actually going to change mine because I've only just realised how well Morgan had fought back through the field.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'm going to change mine to Moffat.
Yeah. Are you surprised at this point, though?
I thought he would be closer to Cook.
Yeah.
So, obviously, last season was a difficult season for Moffat in the Infinity. Season before, he had Sutton alongside him, and we thought we saw some glimpses of what would be good results, and maybe he could kick on from that. He's not new to the Championship. He's fairly much a stalwart of the Championship now.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And I'm expecting more, especially in a car that took race wins last season.
Yeah.
Where's the performance?
I would say, where's the performance, period, because Cook is also not doing particularly great.
No, he had a bang average weekend this weekend.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's a tricky one.
Before we go, a quick roundup of the penalties for the weekend. In race one, Rowbottom was officially reprimanded for an incident involving Stephen Jelly. In race two, Sam Osborne received a 0.5-second penalty for obtaining an unfair advantage, whether inadvertently or not. From an incident with Ricky Collard, so that's where he tapped him at wide clearways.
The places got reversed back.
Pretty much. Will Power received a 5-second penalty for obtaining an unfair advantage, whether inadvertently or not, with Andrew Watson. Didn't see it on the telly. I'm assuming it was a push to pass.
No, we did see that they were running together on the sort of like timing tower on the left hand side on there, and then Watson just dropped down quite a few places. We're assuming they must have come together.
And then I think we might have mentioned the Collard penalty.
Did Collard get a penalty?
He did,
And one that wasn't put on there but obviously was added during the race was Jade's 5-second penalty for being out of position on the grid in race two. But yeah, join us again for the grades and also to find out how well we did in our predictions for the weekend.
Yep.
We will be at Snetterton next time out in Norfolk, and hopefully it will be warm but not sweltering like it was last year, because last year was unbearable.
Here is a public reminder. Wear a hat.
Yes.
Sam. Wear sun lotion, Sam, because you always get a very red face on the wind.
Yes, yeah, I think I might have to bring that with me next time. But yeah, any final thoughts for this Brands weekend?
Be nice to each other, everybody. It's got a bit toxic on social media over the last couple of rounds. Come on, we're better than this.
Nothing can change on there now. The results are done. Decisions can't be changed.
Be nice. We're all out to support a driver, but come on, be nice.
Yeah, looking forward to Snetterton. I always enjoy going there and generally decent racing. You're not a fan, are you?
Preview. Save for the preview. That's okay, my final
thought. Save for the preview. But yeah, we'll be back again with our predictions and grades.
Hi there, it's Sam here. If you're enjoying this podcast, why don't you leave us a like? And don't forget to subscribe. You can also leave us a 5-star review. And we're also on social media at Facebook and Instagram, where you can message us directly.